Hey, Titans fans. Tuesday the 24th, we're going to be doing a live mock draft on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be picking for every team with details on every pick as we try to find who the Titans should take with the 25th selection. Again, that's Tuesday the 24th, 7 p.m. Central Time. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Titan Size Podcast. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of the Titan Size Podcast, Matthias Wadner and Will Lomas. We are here today to preview the edge rusher position in the 2018 NFL Draft, which is just under 2 weeks away. Next week, we will be joined by analytics guru Jim Coburn. We'll spend a full episode with him. But then after that, leading up to the draft, we are going to do a live mock draft on Blog Talk Radio. Matthias or Will, y'all want to tell people how they can watch that? We don't actually have a link to it yet, but when is that going to be? 7 p.m., I guess?
Yeah, sometime at night. it's definitely going to be fun, we'll tell you that much. We've done live shows in the past, but we've never done something like this. And we really haven't been putting out too many mock drafts on our respective websites, really. So this is probably, I haven't done a mock draft, so this is going to be one of the only times this entire offseason that I actually do a mock draft. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It may be the only time any of us on this podcast do something where we actually go through what other teams would do and think from another perspective and really kind of get our boards out there. So for as much as I do fan speak mocks and stuff like that, where I just pick for the Titans or I look at things that could happen with the Titans, this is the first time where I'll be actively making decisions that I think other teams should make. So, I mean, it'll be a really cool way to kind of look at how we all view the draft and who we value more than others and stuff like that.
So keep an eye out on the Titan-sized Twitter page for a link to that, which will be coming soon. But again, that will be Tuesday, April the 24th, around 7 p.m. Central Time, thereabouts. We'll have more concrete information a little bit closer to the event. Let's dive headfirst in. Let's just go ahead and start talking about the edge rushers. Last week when we talked about linebackers, we started with Roquan Smith, who everybody kind of has as the consensus number one. So let's start with the consensus number one edge rusher, and that's Bradley Chubb from NC State. Is he Myles Garrett? No. Is he Von Miller? No. I don't even think he's, you know, Khalil Mack. But what he is someone who profiles as a guy who's probably going to easily be able to get, you know, 10, 11 sacks a year. I've heard comparisons to Chandler Jones. I think Brian Arakpo is also potentially a pretty good comparison for Chubb. Just an overall clean prospect. I mean, not a lot to talk about. He does a little bit of everything, and he does it all pretty well.
Yeah, I'm not going to call anyone, any prospect, a safe prospect because those don't exist. But this is about as close as you're going to get, really. He's good at every single thing. Like, I've seen him even get out and cover, and at his size to be able to do that is really impressive. He has a wide array of pass rush moves. He can beat you with a bull rush. He can bend around the tackles. He also, in addition to all of these things that he's good at in pass rushing and run defending, he has a relentless motor. He never stops on any play throughout an entire game, and that's exactly what you want if you're investing a top five pick in a player. The only real negative, I mean, if you're really trying to nitpick, he over pursues plays at times. But I mean, that's something you could correct at the next level, especially if he's not given as much free rein as he was in college.
Yeah, you know, I don't love doing player comps, but sometimes I think they're the best way to kind of get out what we want people to view a prospect as. Somebody I think that Chubb is really similar to is Derek Barnett, but more athletic. Barnett was always good at being relentless and getting underneath the shoulder pads of offensive tackles and tight ends and getting around the edge. Chubb can do all that, but he's got a little bit more in his arsenal and he's a little bit more athletic. I mean, not every guy has to be a, scream off the edge, bend flat, that kind of thing. They can win in other ways, kind of like Joey Bosa does. I don't think he's on that level, but he's probably just right underneath that. And Chandler Jones is a comparison you might hear a lot. Chandler Jones is probably the best edge player in the NFL in terms of what they do on an every down basis. I mean, I don't think anybody's had more sacks than him over the last 5 years, which is interesting. I don't think people talk about that a lot. It's either sacks or tackles for loss that he holds that mark in. But they're both kind of the same guy. And Chubb could have that kind of career where he never has the best pass rushing season and he never has the flashiest sacks, but you look up and he's got 12 and a half sacks and, you know, 8 more tackles for loss, and he's just chugging along and, you know, winning consistently. So, I absolutely think he's the best pass rusher and edge overall in this class.
He reminds me a little bit of Joey Bosa. I'm not comparing him to Joey Bosa, like, not that they're similar players, but in the sense that, you know, there's nothing Bradley Chubb does where you're like, whoa. Like, you know, Myles Garrett, his athletic profile was off the charts. And when you look at someone like, even in this draft, a Harold Landry, who we'll talk about more in a minute, you see his get off and his athleticism and his ability to bend, and you're like, whoa, that's incredible. Or you some prospects, and they're good against the run, whatever. You know, Chubb is kind of a nothing really stands out, but he's good at everything. And Bosa was kind of the same way.
Yeah, and Bosa got knocked by some analysts just for that reason, that he wasn't particularly special at any one thing and he didn't dominate in any one area. But that really hasn't mattered at the next level, has it? He's been a defensive rookie of the year, and he's gone over double-digit sacks in each of his first 2 seasons. And I definitely see Bradley Chubb having a similar type of impact early on.
Yeah, I mean, One more thing before we move on. Chubb had a game versus Clemson where he was constantly dominant and he was constantly mocking the other team, which was so fun to watch because it was a big game for North Carolina State. They were clearly, you know, shouldn't have been in the same building in terms of overall talent and depth and coaching and all that. You know, they've got some good pieces, but the top end of Clemson's roster will probably end up in the first round, whereas outside of Chubb, they'll be lucky to have a 4th-round pick after this. So, there was clearly a talent discrepancy, but the way that he would go and just beat offensive linemen, and then I think he kept taking the towel from the quarterback, and he would like he was playing flag football. After he sacked him, he would just take the towel off and like keep it in his hands and hold it, and the ref would make him give it back. It's one of the most entertaining games I've seen from an edge rusher this season.
Let's move on. My number 2 edge rusher, and I would assume you guys would agree with this, is Harold Landry from Boston College. When I look at him, he just screams Vic Beasley to me. I love player comparisons, and I think he's a lot like Vic Beasley in terms of he's a smaller edge guy. He's got a lot of speed. It's probably going to take a year to get his feet under him, kind of like it did with Vic Beasley. But once he does get his feet under him, he's going to be a big-time like screamer off the edge, you know, just that fast, bendy edge rusher. And really, you know, the ideal scenario for the Titans would be that he somehow falls to them at pick 25, but I don't know that that's going to happen. He is, though, exactly kind of what the Titans need, just that speed rusher.
Yeah, I was hoping at the combine that he would kind of bomb a little bit or just not perform well, just so he could fall to that 25th pick, which a lot of mock drafts still have him going 25. But after his combine and after these coaches meet with him and they actually study him throughout his collegiate career, I'm not expecting him to be there, and because he's really good, even though he only has that one huge year of production in 2016. This past season he was dealing with an ankle injury, and he still produced rather well. It's not like he was non-existent out there. He was still making an impact. He didn't have the big numbers like he did in 2016, but like I said, he was hampered by an injury, and it was tough to replicate that 2016 season. That was one of the best pass rushing seasons we've seen in a while. So he's really good. He's good. He's kind of good at everything. He's really gap sound in run defense. Very adept run defender. He's fantastic at bending around tackles on pass rushes, which is key at the next level because offensive tacklers are just so strong. You need to find ways to beat them go around them. He uses his hands pretty well. He could disengage better. I'd like to see that worked on at the next level. And his athletic testing was really good. So I would love for him to be the pick at 25, but I'm really not expecting him to be there.
Yeah, I agree with everything y'all said. Something that doesn't get talked about a lot is how in his good pass rush year, he did such a good job with that tomahawk where he would come around and knock the ball out of the quarterback's hands, and he was just very active. He had 7 forced fumbles in 2016, which led the nation by far. He had 10 in his career, and that's good for something like 10th best all time of any player, and it's number one in the ACC. I mean, he's just really an instinctual pass rusher who knows what to do and how to get around guys. He's got a lot of bend, which now that's the thing. Okay. So when he wins in the way that makes him dominant, he has to be able to bend really low, which puts a lot of stress on your ankles just in terms of how you have to run. So if the ankle injury is a long-term thing, which I don't think it is, then that's the concern that might push him down boards. But that's also why he didn't have an amazingly productive year this year, is because, you know, think about a power rusher if they had a torn tricep. Like, if you're somebody who does one thing really, really well and you can't do that one thing, it makes it tough on you. But if you don't have any concern about Landry's long-term health or anything like that, then, I mean, there's no reason why he shouldn't be a top 10 pick. And there's a chance that he goes top 10. I mean, there's no reason why a good pass rusher who can get sacks by the dozens shouldn't go top 10 if you're a team that has quarterback, offensive line, wide receiver, and corner kind of all figured out. You know, I would take him over Roquan Smith and Tremaine Edmonds and those guys. I mean, I just think he's more impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you kind of noticed it last season that he was being hampered by that injury because he didn't look as fast as he did in the previous years, and he was getting beaten to the edge by quicker quarterbacks and running backs. So it definitely did affect him. I think he might go 14 to the Packers. I'm not sure he makes it past there, to be honest.
The Packers need something. They need juice.
Yeah, on defense. Yeah,
they're in Detroit, where his old defensive line coach goes. He's not. I mean, there's too many teams that need pass rushers as it is. But for some reason, you keep seeing him linked 14 to Green Bay, and like I said, Detroit hired Boston College's defensive line coach to coach their defensive line. So, I mean, if they're not in love with anybody at 20, which I think where they pick, then he's got to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So after Landry is kind of when you get into more like up for debate players, because I think everyone would agree that Chubb and that Landry are top-notch prospects as far as the edge rush position is concerned. After that is where I would say it's probably more up for debate. And so let's start, as we move into that phase, with a player that I think all three of us really like, and that's Hercules Mata'afa. Will, you've kind of been the conductor of this train for a long time, and I have to say, you know, Mata'afa, apparently people say he has the best first step in the entire draft, but it is going to be a positional transition, moving from primarily inside to primarily outside. He's got the athleticism to do it, but it all comes down to his translation ability, which is one of the hardest things to predict in the NFL.
Yeah, NFL teams are really scared of like the unknown and having to do any kind of creative work. They love to have a one-to-one, this is what he's going to do for my team, which, you know, is part of the reason why Baker Mayfield isn't being talked about as one of the top guys, is because, and which is a whole different thing. But if you can't project a guy directly into your system, it freaks guys out. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me why he's not being talked about more. He has he had 22.5 tackles for loss last year. There's a lot of guys you're going to hear about that are drafted ahead of him that don't have 22 tackles for loss in their best 2 years. What he does is so impressive, and he did it playing a defensive tackle. So here's the argument you're getting. You're hearing that he's undersized to play defensive end, and yet he was productive getting double teams from centers and or from centers and guards and from guards and tackles at the collegiate level. But for some reason, when he's going one-on-one with tackles, he's not big enough now. It doesn't make any sense. And, I mean, he's not 200 pounds. He's 255 pounds, and he's 6'2 and a half. That's not small. He's not an old prospect. It's not like he just gets tackles for loss. He had 10 and a half sacks last year, which led the Pac-12. The only reason that he's not being talked about as a first-round pick is either there's something going on behind the scenes with his character, which I don't know about and I haven't heard because I'm not privy to that kind of stuff, or people just aren't creative enough to think about him like that. It doesn't make any sense when you watch him on film. He's just so explosive. His hand use is great. He does the stuff that bigger guys are afraid to do sometimes, which means – like when there's a pulling guard, he's not afraid to take out the pulling guard and kind of set that edge and really screw the running back. Just like he's not afraid to go full upfield, you know, which generally leaves you vulnerable to a pulling guard. I mean, everything he does is good if he weighed 280 pounds or if he weighed 220 pounds. There's no reason, based on the film, that he shouldn't be one of the top guys. But like I said, for whatever reason, you're just not going to hear him talk about it.
Well, the reason we're going to hear and the reason he's probably not going very high in mock drafts right now is because people fall in love with athletic testing, and he didn't test particularly well at the combine. In my opinion, I don't care when I watch his tape. He's a first-round talent, and I have no doubt about that. I mean, you can look at whatever you want. You can even go to the production. He had 21 sacks, 45 and a half tackles for loss in 3 years, playing as a defensive tackle at 250 pounds. I mean, that's just in the Pac-12 too. It's not like he was doing this at in Conference USA. He can slip through blockers with ease. He's extremely quick off the line, which I think would really help him on the edge. And sometimes when he was used on stunts in college, you actually saw him get around to the edge, and he was bending around blockers just like a normal edge pass rusher would. I mean, you want to talk about front multiplicity. He is literally front multiplicity personified. So I'd be shocked if he's not considered heavily by Mike Vrabel. And especially because Vrabel coached, I don't know if they're particularly similar, but Whitney Mercilus is around the same frame, and he plays edge, and he's also been used on the line at defensive tackle and stuff like that. So I could definitely see Vrabel being enticed by Mataafa.
I just looked it up. So Mataafa played 3 years. He was redshirted his first year. He ended his career with 47 tackles for loss. Miles Garrett ended his career with 48 and a half. So as dominant as people remember Miles Garrett being, and I'm not saying he's that guy, but what I'm saying is there's not a huge difference between the offensive tackles that play at Missouri and Mississippi State and all the powder puffs that Texas A&M played while Garrett was there compared to the Pac-12 offensive tackles. There's just not that big of a difference. So for them to have very similar production in, you know, basically the same amount of games, it's just something to think about when you think, you know, does production really matter? Yeah, it matters. And maybe, you know, we'll talk about some later that depend more on athleticism. But it's really important to remember that the great players are dominant in college 90% of the time. And Mataafa was dominant in college.
Mm-hmm. And John Robinson likes players who were dominant in college.
Yeah, especially if you have one spike year. For pass rushers, it's historically been 1 year with 8 or more sacks, I think, with Aaron Wallace having the low number on that. And I think that Caraway and Dodd both had 10 or more sack seasons in 1 year. So if you have a spike of production, it seems like that's what he's grading off of. So it's something to note.
Now I think is really where the three of us are going to maybe start disagreeing. Marcus Davenport. a polarizing player, at least for us. I don't think he's anything special. I mean, I'm looking at my notes, and I wrote, he has a potential not to bust, but to be very underwhelming. Like, one of those guys, not like, he's not going to be Kevin Dodd, but I feel like he's one of those guys you bring in. Like, I feel like his ceiling might be Derek Morgan, and Derek Morgan has never hit 10 sacks before. And, you know, I don't know that Derek Morgan was a bad first-round pick. I mean, he's been here forever, but, I mean, how much is Derek Morgan worth? You know, I mean, someone who's never going to get to 10 sacks. I wrote down that if Derek Barnett was in this year's draft class, who was someone I wasn't very high on, I would have Barnett ahead of Marcus Davenport. But Will, I know you kind of like him, so I'm just going to kind of let you two take it away, because I'm not the biggest fan of Marcus Davenport. I just don't think he's anything special.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll leave the optimism for the end. So I'm not a huge fan either, to be honest. And I think if you're drafting him, I mean, you're doing on pure projection. I mean, sure, he was somewhat productive, but he was playing in a very not good conference. And when he played against the bigger teams, I didn't really see him do much. Even like against Baylor, I didn't see him have an impact at all. So when he's going north south. In pass rushing, he's very good because he's extremely powerful, and he can bolt rush probably any tackle there is just because he's so strong, and he can get going pretty quickly. But once he has to figure out what to do if he gets stopped at the point of attack, then the play is pretty much over for him, because I don't see him shed blocks very often, especially in pass rush. I don't know. I mean, he ran a really good a really good 40 time. I think he ran like a 4.58 at 6.7, 255, which is like ridiculous.
Insane. Yeah, it's like a truck driving at like Lamborghini speeds. It's an insane thing. Keep going.
Yeah, no, but I don't see that speed on tape when I watch him. And I just don't feel like he's that fluid going laterally. So I don't like him all that much. I mean, you're really projecting. If you're drafting him in the first round, if we did draft him in the first round, I'd probably riot. But I would trust in John Robinson just because he's John Robinson. But I think I would much rather have Mataafa than Davenport.
Yeah. So I started out not being very into Davenport because there was only a few games I could find. And as the offseason went on, I watched more and more, like his Baylor game, and he really grew on me. So there's a couple of things that I really like about him. First of all, like we talked about a second ago, he's huge. He's borderline 6'6", and he runs. So last year, I'll give you some numbers. Solomon Thomas was 6'2.5", like almost 6'. And, you know, we can round up 6'3" and call Davenport 6'6". So Solomon Thomas ran a 4.69. Davenport ran a 4.58. The three cone, which I've said before, is one of the most, if not the most important pass rusher, you know, what you grade off of. Davenport had a 7.2 at his size, which is really good, and Solomon Thomas had a 6.95. So that's probably the biggest concern, is their bend. But, I mean, broad jump similar, despite him being way bigger. I mean, it just... He's a really good athlete, and Solomon Thomas, one of his big qualities was he was such a dominant athlete. One thing I really like about Davenport that doesn't get talked enough is his progression. So let's go in terms of sacks. His first year he had 3, second year he had 4, fourth year he had 6.5, last year he had 8.5. So it's good. It's pretty good production. But the same thing happened with tackles for loss. He went from 3 to 7.5, to 10, to 17.5. So you've got a pattern that says he can slowly develop and get better as his career goes on, and that he can adapt to different circumstances and good players and all that kind of stuff.
A lot of forced fumbles, too.
Yeah, and, you know, 6, which is great. You know, it's I didn't want to bring it up because we just talked about a guy who got 10 and 6 didn't
seem. No, I know.
But 6 is still really good for your career, and he had 3 last year, and he had 4 pass deflections. So, I mean, he's affecting the ball. But something that really kind of makes me think this translates to the NFL is at the Senior Bowl, you don't want to put too much stock in practices, but if it reflects something that you've seen on tape and you've seen throughout a guy's career, it's okay to kind of extrapolate that. And as the Senior Bowl practices went on, first day he was bad because his pad level was high. Second day he was better. I think there was three practices that they practiced in. And the third practice he was getting good reviews from everybody because he was listening to coaching. And in the game, which doesn't really matter, but in the game he had two sacks and was really good. So if you can get him to play a little bit lower, which is always hard for guys who are 6'6", but if you can just develop that a little bit, he's got all the athleticism to be a dominant guy in the NFL. And Jim Coburn, who is, you know, a friend of the podcast, we love him. I keep up with his stuff a lot, and he said that athletically and production-wise, the best comp for Davenport is actually Jason Pierre-Paul, which, as soon as he said it, makes a ton of sense to me because they do kind of play in a similar way. Pierre-Paul had to develop that counter move as he got older and into his second year with the Giants. But that, I mean, if you can give me Jason Pierre-Paul's career, which it's not a guarantee, but athletically, production-wise, you know, with how his frame is built, if you can say I can give you 90% of what Jason Pierre-Paul was, you absolutely take that guy at 25 in the draft.
Probably so. Yeah, I mean.
Didn't Jason have like 18 sacks one year? I mean, maybe. Like
Pierre-Paul? Yeah, he was crazy. Yeah, at USF.
Is a pretty big thing.
So next up on my list, Marcus Davenport is not in my top five. Rounding out my top five, actually, I don't know. We're just going to move on. We're going to talk about Lorenzo Carter, who is one of my favorite players in the entire draft class. He is becoming, for me, what Evan Engram was last year. Just a player that I love probably a little too much. Just because he's so fast. He can scream off the edge. And more so than probably any other of the players we've talked about or are going to talk about, there's a lot you can do with him. You can play him at inside linebacker if you want to. You can play him at edge rusher. He can have his hand in the dirt. He can be standing up. You know, there's so many different things you can do with him. And when it comes down to it, I think a guy like that has more value than a Derek Morgan does, where they're going to get you, you know, 9-10 sacks at very most, and probably not, you know what I'm saying. I just think he has really high upside, and I think he's a fun player, and I think whoever gets him is going to be very happy.
Yeah.
Interesting that you mentioned that point, because in my notes I actually have that he can play multiple positions, because I've seen him play multiple positions and I think he translates very well to the next level. Like you said, I think he could play inside linebacker easily in certain sets.
I mean,
in college he played.
The thing about him is Hassan Reddick got so much buzz last year because he was fast. Why isn't Lorenzo Carter getting that same buzz? Is there that much separation in the two?
There's separation in terms of production, because Lorenzo Carter didn't exactly have crazy stats, but a lot of that is because he was splitting time on a truly stacked defense at Georgia for the past 3 years. So that makes sense. But even when he was in there, he was always making an impact. So like you said, I think he's very versatile. He's one of the most athletic players in this entire draft. I mean, he ran a 4.5 flat at 6'6", 250 or something around that. Which is just insane. 130-inch broad jump, 36-inch vertical jump. I mean, that is absolutely an NFL type of athlete, and a top-tier kind of athlete. And when you watch him on tape, he's usually making plays. He's really quick to the ball, and particularly when he's standing up on the edge, it looks like he's shot out of a cannon. Most of the time, just comes like a missile off the edge, getting at quarterbacks, and he can force some fumbles whenever he gets in there. He's also a really good run defender, which is important at the next level, especially if you're playing out on the edge, or if they're playing you inside as well. So I really like him, and I'm glad we're talking about him, because I do like him, and a lot of the edges that we're probably going to talk about right now, I don't like. I think he's probably my number four edge right now. behind Chubb, Landry, and Mataafa. I'd be content with him at 25, despite the somewhat of a risk in terms of his production in college.
Yeah, the production is kind of my big concern. I like Carter a lot. Like, if you told me we were going to go back to the old Washburn system and run a wide nine, and we were going to put Casey in the middle and Daquan Jones and just let them sort it out, you know, I could see it working. I mean, there's a lot you can do with him if you just say you're going to rush upfield at the quarterback, and then every now and then we're going to drop you off because you're really athletic and just bring an overload blitz from the other side. You know, you can move him around. I mean, he's probably big enough to play some nickel defensive tackle if you want to get one of those NASCAR packages in. He can probably play off the ball. You can probably move him around and put him – you know those weird amoeba defenses that we used to run with where Jarrell Casey would stand up and walk around and do that stupid stuff? He could probably do that effectively because he's a linebacker and not a defensive tackle. You can play him a lot of places. – I guess the problem, if I had to pick a problem, which I don't think he's a first round guy. I mean, not that he's not, but I mean, when I think of first round guys, I think of a guy who I believe that this guy is going to make a constant impact. And the reason why I'm a little bit hesitant with that is because the player he reminds me of most is Deion Jordan when he was with Oregon, and I loved Deion. He was a star, but for whatever reason, when Miami got him, they had trouble finding out where they wanted to put him. I remember they played him at different positions in training camp and were trying to figure out. And at the time, I thought, okay, he's going to be the ultimate chess piece. But if a guy is that big and that athletic and doesn't have anything – I mean, his best season was 5 sacks, talking about Carter now. Mm-hmm. You know, to not have kind of a carved-out role where you almost move a defense around you, being that big and that athletic and being a four-year player, it kind of makes me nervous. I don't have any aversion to him specifically for the Titans, because I think the Titans just need somebody who's a pass rusher right now and who can develop into an every-down guy. But, I mean – I wouldn't take him if I had nobody starting at defensive end, you know. And I don't know. It's really weird because he's so intriguing with his athleticism. He's got a huge wingspan. I mean, especially when people don't pick him up right off the line, if they let him build up a little bit of steam before the offensive tackle initiates contact, I mean, he can just devastate him because he can get upfield so quickly and offensive tackles get out of position. But at the same time, in my head, I keep thinking, if he can do that now, why doesn't he ever have more than 5 sacks a year? I mean, we were talking about Mataafa's production and how he has 22.5 tackles for loss this year. Lorenzo Carter has 20.5 for his entire career, and he's played 54 games, which is about twice as many as Mataafa has. So that is a big concern to me. Like I said, production really matters to me, and that's why I don't have him in the first round. But like I said, for the Titans, maybe they move back from 25. Maybe they pick up some extra picks. I mean, I don't hate him. I just am concerned.
Yeah, so I feel like a bit of a hypocrite right now because I said I don't like Davenport because he's a projection. And Lorenzo Carter is probably just as much as of a projection. Yeah. But I think the thing that I just see differently in them, I just think Carter translates better to the NFL, and I think he's more versatile, at least. And I feel like he actually has a plan when he's out there. I don't see that with Davenport all that often. So that's probably the main difference between the two in my eyes.
Well, I think a lot of that is because Carter kind of had to have that because he played against some of the best offensive linemen because he played in the SEC. There's a lot of guys that Davenport went against that if he got pissed off, you know, after his junior year, he could just turn whatever he was doing into a bull rush, and there was a good chance that offensive lineman couldn't stop him because I mean, he's really strong. And being 6'6", if you don't get your hands on him quick and if you don't stay underneath him, if you're an offensive tackle that has one bad snap, he's going to drive you back. So for as much talk as there is about him standing straight up, if you are an offensive tackle and you stand straight up, he's going to kill you. So Davenport never really had to develop that much in his game, and I kind of credit him with that, with saying he never had to, but he's got all the tools to do it, instead of saying I've never seen him do it. It's kind of that whole creativity, you know, Mataafa thing where I've seen that he has the traits to do something, even though I haven't necessarily seen it on film. But you're mm-hmm. right. To not like Lorenzo Carter and to like Davenport or vice versa, it really doesn't make a ton of sense just in terms of they're both kind of the same guy, except one's been a little bit more productive against bad competition and one's been less productive but played against better competition. So
I think mm-hmm. Lorenzo Carter's a better athlete than Marcus Davenport.
Yes. Which,
yeah, maybe.
It looks like it on film, at least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would say
who had the better three cone, Will? You always preach the three cone as being very important.
Let me look that up.
I don't think Carter did a three cone.
No, Carter didn't run it. He had an insane broad jump. He had almost 11 feet, which is nuts.
Yeah, 130.
I mean, am I insane to mention him in the same conversation as Jadeveon Clowney?
In terms of athlete or football player?
I mean, athlete, I guess. I mean, his profile is pretty similar.
No. Yeah, they are pretty similar, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, the difference is that Jadeveon Clowney played base 4-3 defensive end his entire career. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you knew exactly what Jadeveon Clowney was going to come in and play in the NFL. Like, the Texans wanted to run him at stand-up backer, which was stupid, and that's why he wasn't productive. You know, Vrabel came in and said, look, you know, I'll play him at backer, but this is how you've got to play him. And once Vrabel fixed him, he's been good, which is upsetting. He's not the next coming of J.J. Watt like everybody wants him to be, but he is pretty good against run. And, you know, he's good. I don't want to praise the Texans too much. But, I mean, he's been okay, but you need to have plan with players. Like, it's great to have a guy like Jamie Collins on your team, and maybe Lorenzo Carter can be that kind of guy. You know, maybe he can be, I'm going to play some, you know, 4-3 outside linebacker for like four snaps, and then for 10 snaps, I'm going to play pass rusher. And maybe he can do that, but it's always a little bit of a concern, and that's why guys like Jamie Collins get pushed down to the draft.
But I like Carter, though. I think he's going to I just like him. I like fast players. And that's what the Titans need on defense, is they need speed, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. If you like a fast player, you should check out this guy named Marcus Davenport. He's really fast. So, I mean, I don't know if you know him, but he's pretty great.
I don't know. I'm just not buying in.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah, that's what it's going to have to be.
Moving on to, you know, you hear about tragedies all the time in the news and everything, and our next player is a tragedy. It's Arden Key. It's just, yeah, I mean, you looked at him before, even before the combine, and you're like, you know, despite all of the strange off the field problems, you know, he's still probably a first round draft pick. And then he laid an egg at his pro day, ran like a 4.85 in the 40 yard dash. I mean, it's just tragic. I mean, his fall has been meteoric. I mean, since where we once thought he was going to go. And so now I pose the question, where is it worth drafting him at this point?
It is a question I can't answer. Because it's so hard to evaluate.
I mean,
him.
If he's sitting there at the end of day two, I think you have to take a flyer on him. But, like, he's not a first round draft pick, and he's probably not a second round draft pick.
No.
I don't know that you take him.
No.
That might be too high.
I'm not sure you take him any of the top three rounds, to be honest with you. Yeah. There are legitimate character concerns. He's dealt with multiple injuries that have hurt him over the seasons. And I mean, his weight has fluctuated so much year to year. So I don't even know how to properly evaluate him, because last season he just looked really slow. He didn't really disengage with blockers all that much. He was getting stood up far too often. But then you go back to 2016, he was down in weight. He was playing fast. He was playing loose. He was athletic. He actually seemed like he knew what he was doing when he was pass rushing. I don't think he's all that great of a run defender. But, I mean, if you're getting the 2016 guy, I think you consider him at the back half of round one and in round two for sure. But if you're getting 2017 Arden Key, I don't even know how you draft him in the top three or four rounds, because he was not good at all. And obviously there are the character concerns to add to that. It's really tough. I mean, I don't even know what he weighs right now. But in order for him to maximize his potential, I think he needs to be around like 240 or 245 pounds, so he can play fast and just play play loose. But I don't know. I really don't know where I would take him. I don't like him right now.
Yeah, I mean I don't know what his weight was. I don't know what his weight was at his pro day, but it was something like 435, 440 or something like that. I don't think he did any drill. I mean, he did some drills, but he didn't do the 40-yard dash. He did the three cone, and it was all right. It was sub 7.2, which is really kind of the marker for a guy about that size. He's almost 6'5", so it's like, okay, that's good. Then he goes to his pro day, and I think they said he ran a 4.8, like a 4.85 or something. I mean, that's slow, and that's slow at, like, the combine if you're sick. Not at, you know, when you're all revved up at your pro day. Like, so you can probably add a tenth of a second on that. So you're talking about a guy who was 235, 240, and ran almost a 5-second 40-yard dash. Like, that's baffling to me. And that's not the guy you see on film, like, back in 2016. So I don't know what happened in his life from 2016 to 2017. I mean, maybe Les Miles had some sort of, you know, way of getting to him and really motivating him and doing that. Maybe you can attribute it to that, because Miles has had great success with defensive players before. So maybe that's what it was. But, man, I truly don't know. I mean, he was not the same guy. He reportedly left the program. He hurt his shoulder. Mm-hmm. He stayed injured. He had a knee injury. He's been suspended before by the team. It's just, it's a lot of red flags. And John Robinson doesn't necessarily need Boy Scouts, but so far, if he's going to take you on day one or day two, you better be pretty pristine off the field. Or if you're Johnny Smith, who got, you know, hot water poured on you, it's because it was somebody else's fault that you were in the newspaper, not your own. So,
yeah,
I don't know how they touch him. Like, so there's.
I mean, I don't think the Titans are going to touch him, but just kind of in general, like, because someone's going to draft him. Obviously, he's not going to go undrafted. Okay,
but let's say it's the Ravens, because they're a team that doesn't care about character. I tell you what, let's say it's the Bengals.
That's a better option.
They like 6'5" guys. They're not worried about they took Marcus Hunt in the second round. They're not worried about, you know, necessarily you being the fastest guy in the world, but they like big, long players. They don't care about off the field stuff. If he goes there, I mean, what do you do with him in year one? Use him as what, a designated pass rusher, and you work on his weight? Okay, let's say he does that and he's really good and he gets 5 sacks as a pure pass rusher for you. Okay, well, what are you going to do with him next year? Is he your starter? Is he still going to be a designated pass rusher? Like, it doesn't make the long-term plan for him in there, because you don't even know if he can commit to an off-season program. I mean, he hasn't shown you that he can do that in the last 12 months. So I just don't know what you do with him.
Yeah.
We're going to move on now and talk about someone that Matias doesn't like, which he told us before we started that he doesn't like any of the edge rushers, which may have been an exaggeration. But
I don't like half of them.
Sam Hubbard from Ohio State. This one probably gets more boos than even Marcus Davenport did. No, I was reading about him, and I kind of like his potential. You know, he's not a gimmick in that, you know, even Arden Key, like, did a lot of things really well and had a good athletic profile, and we talk about Harold Landry's fast and Bradley Chubb is solid. You know, Sam Hubbard, he is what he is.
Bad.
Where do you draft who he is? I don't know. I mean,
he is what he is, but who wants what he is?
I mean, I'll just let you guys take over. I think he's solid. I think he's probably a second-round talent, but not at 25, no.
I don't think he's anywhere near second-round talent. I feel like I'm Skip Bayless, and like I hate everyone, but it's really not it. I'm watching these players, and I just don't see like an NFL impact player, especially with Hubbard. I mean, what are his pros? I mean, he's kind of versatile because he can play on the line or he can play standing up. I mean, he had a great 3-cone drill time at the combine. That's great, which is usually a good barometer for future success for edges. And I mean, I guess if he gets like one-on-one with a blocker sometimes in the run game, he can shed that block and make a play. But I feel like he has so little feel for actual pass rushing. It seems like he's just running at tackles most of the time. He doesn't have great awareness. He was okay in production, but I mean, when you're playing when your bookend is Joey Bosa and then Nick Bosa, yeah, you should have more than 17 sacks in your entire Ohio State career. So, and another thing that concerns me a little bit, he's oversized for an edge, in my opinion. He's 6'5", 270, and at his pro day, he ran a 4.95.
Yeah, that's gross. That's
disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, how do you draft that guy in the first three rounds? I don't know.
Yeah, he's got to be a defensive tackle. Like, I mean, I don't.
Or 4-3 DE. 4-3 DE, maybe. Or 3-4 DE.
Like, maybe that's how you use it. But he's not really strong with his hands. Like,
I know.
He doesn't do anything well. And I don't mean that in that, like, he does a lot of things okay, but he just doesn't stand out in one area. I don't ever see him make a play when he's touched. When he's blocked, he's like, there's this play that people show where he tackles Saquon Barkley and the quarterback at the same time because he comes unblocked and because the offensive line protection is going the wrong way. So the quarterback is trying to read the defensive end on the other side, but the offensive line ran it the wrong way, I think. Either that or the quarterback's looking in the wrong spot or just not making a decision. And so he doesn't know whether to pull it or not. So he and Barkley are both just kind of standing there. And it just happens that Hubbard is playing that particular snap. And he runs out and he makes a tackle. And I tried to tell somebody that's not why he's good, because he comes unblocked. I'm like, everybody in the NFL can make that play, whether you hate him. I mean, Kevin Dodd can make that play every time. Like, it's just an easy play to make. And they're like, yeah, but it's strong. He's strong that he tackled both of them.
Wait, what? I'm like, Kevin Dodd can make that play every when?
Every time. Like, it just – if you would have told
Hot
me
– take.
If you would have told me that Hubbard would have run a 7.5 3 cone, I would have said that's exactly what it looks like on film. You never see him bend. His hand technique isn't good. I mean, he is just not very good. I mean, honestly, based off what we've seen in college and the NFL, I would probably rather play Kevin Dodd than Sam Hubbard.
Wow.
I'm not sure about that one.
But here's my thing. What have you seen Sam Hubbard do that's,
I mean,
better?
That's like saying I would rather have Jamarcus Russell than Josh Allen. Like, no one, yeah, we don't like Josh Allen, but crazy. At least we know that Jamarcus Russell is a bust. We don't necessarily know that Josh Allen's going to be a bust.
I mean, I guess you're saying, like, there's a chance that he might suck slightly less, but I don't know, man. Like, Kevin Dodd got a sack his rookie year. Like, I'm not sure.
Against Taylor Decker, right?
Yeah, like, and it was a good sack. Like, I can tell you that maybe there's a chance that Dodd's injury, like, actually hurt him, like, and he was going to be at least a decent backup.
And but, he was playing out of position the whole time.
What do you mean?
Well, he's not a 3-4 outside linebacker,
yeah,
Kevin
yeah.
Dodd.
But he was playing in that Morgan spot where he was – it doesn't matter. Anyway, the thing is like, I don't know where Hubbard's going to win in the NFL. Like – if you want to use – so people talk about – and honestly, it's because he's big and white. They're like, he's really good in his run fits, but he's really not. Like, he's really not good in his run fits. Like, Harold Landry in 2016 was way better in his run fits and playing technically sound than anybody gives him credit for. And just because it's hard to move Hubbard because he's kind of long and, like, has a weird center of gravity and all that, people are like, he's really good. Not, I mean, not really. Like, he really is not. And the good thing is that if John Robinson wants one dominant season of production, and if Mike Vrabel's not just standing on the table for him, which I don't think Vrabel will do, then there's no reason for the Titans to draft him. They're not necessarily concerned with overly athletic guys on the edge. Like, it's not what they've drafted in, not what they drafted in Wallace, not what they drafted in Dodd, not what they drafted in Caraway. So it seems like athleticism is not necessarily the marker they look for. It's production. And while 90% of Hubbard's athleticism is garbage, I mean, I guess there was a broken stopwatch or something. They got him at a 6.84. I mean, he had the best three cone, which, I mean, it makes me almost not want to touch the three cone anymore. But, like, he had the best three cone of the combine, and maybe he can be that guy. Maybe he's just being used out of position or some nonsense like that, like people say with Josh Sweat. But I don't know.
So, good news is he had, according to PFF, 48 total QB pressures over his career. But I don't know in what games they came from because I didn't see one when I watched it.
Yeah, like, QB pressures is great. Like, you remember that time they had Arakpo for, like, 12 quarterback pressures versus Russell Wilson, but he had zero sacks?
Right, yeah.
That was, that game, getting to watch Russell Wilson in person was, like, a blessing. Like, that dude, when you talk about how, like, elusive and quick he is the real deal. Yeah. Like, that was nuts. I've never seen anything like that before.
But the thing is, like, quarterback pressures could almost just be listed as, like, quarterback misses where your guy just fails. The same thing with quarterback hits. Like, I don't care if my guy gets 12 quarterback hits a year. If they're all sacks, I'd rather that than have 40 quarterback pressures and only get 4 sacks. There's, like, sacks is the only stat that matters when you're rushing the passer. So all that other stuff, because how do you know when a guy's pressured? Does he speed up his release? Because Marcus does that anytime there's a guy who's going to have a free rush on him, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's pressured. It just means it's time to get the ball out to his hot route. So pressured is such a weird kind of you can't really get a hold of it. It's a stat that is perception-based and not based off any, like, real, like, okay, that guy's on the ground, that's a tackle. It's sort of like tackles are measured in the NFL versus solo tackles, where it's like, if Avery Williamson touches a guy after he's been down on the ground, he gets credited with a tackle. It's just a weird stat that I don't put any faith in. And I know you were joking, but it does kind of ruffle my feathers to hear that stat, so I did have to go on that rant.
Last player that we're going to talk about before we head out of here, Josh Sweat. I haven't looked at him. I don't know anything about him. Other than the fact that all these people on Twitter are pushing him for the Titans at 25.
Yeah.
Judging by the fact that I had, like, never heard of him before he was brought up, I'm going to guess that he's probably not a good option at pick 25.
Yeah, it's going to seem like I hate everyone. I really don't, but I would hate if we took this guy at 25. What does he do well? There's one of the things he does well. He's okay at using his hands. Sometimes when he's pass rushing, he, like, knock tackles off balance and kind of get to the quarterback a little quicker. And he's extremely athletic. I mean, one of the best athletes in this draft. 4.53 40-yard dash, nearly a 40-inch vertical jump, 124-inch broad jump. So extremely athletic. But that athleticism doesn't translate onto the field. I mean, he's pretty slow off the line. He's not quick at changing directions when he's out in space. He gets pushed to the ground way too often. And he wasn't productive at all. He had 14 and a half sacks in 3 years and one forced fumble. I mean, if you're picking this guy at 25, it's a complete projection, and you're completely entrusting in Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease to just get the best out of him. Which maybe it'll work out, but it's a huge risk with your first round pick.
Yeah. I just don't know what you... Okay, so...
Obviously, we've talked about six guys. They're not all going to go in the first round. There's no way. I mean, we've talked about six minus Arden Key, seven with him. Yeah, and the six people ahead of him are not all right. going to go in the first round.
Yeah, these right. you know, these two shouldn't. Hubbard and Sweat shouldn't. But Sweat is the perfect guy to go in the first round because, you'll hear it all the time. Coaches always think they're better coaches than everybody else. So if Bill Belichick sees him and says, and Bill Belichick may be right, but he's probably the only one. But if he sees him and says, I think that guy can be the best pass rusher in the NFL because he is amazingly athletic and was used out of position, he's going to think, I'm a better coach than Florida State's coach. I'm smarter than him, so I'll be able to use him better. So even though he was never productive and didn't really pop on tape, it'll be different with me. And 32 teams have head coaches that think like that. Mike Vrabel thinks like that. Everybody thinks like that because it takes that level of arrogance to be a head coach in the NFL. It just does. So you've got that, and the big, I guess, definitive thing is which general manager is going to cave into their head coach. I think Robinson let the coaching staff make a couple of his picks, or at least let them have heavy influences based on kind of what he's done in the past. But I don't think any of them were first round picks. I think all the first round picks have been him. I think he kind of lets them have a second round pick that they think really fits their scheme, or a third round pick, depending on kind of who it is. I think that's why we have Jonnu Smith, which I like Jonnu Smith. I just think it's why he's there. And the same reason it's why I think we got Kevin Dodd is because I think that's just who Dick LeBeau wanted, and I think he carried a lot of weight with the organization. So which GM is going to give in and say, well, maybe my head coach is good enough and he is a really good athlete? Because you're not watching the film to say this. You can watch the film and say, as a 4-eye, which is what he played, he's really good at getting upfield, even though he's the last guy off the ball. He's very slow off the snap. He's got a good body, he's got a good frame, and once he gets underneath the pads of an offensive tackle, he can kind of drive him back, even though he might not make the play. Okay, that's what he is. So how much do you value that guy? Probably, you know, a late third, early fourth is probably where that guy goes. Now, if you use creativity with him, which you won't use with Mataafa because he didn't blow up the combine, but if you say, but if I just move him two gaps, well, I mean, not really gaps, a gap over and move him into a five technique or let him play nine versus tight ends, then all of a sudden he's rushing against the outside shoulder. Well, now it's a different game. He's so athletic, it'll be, you know, he'll be able to get 10 sacks. And, I mean, it's just he's going to be the best guy. Now you're projecting. And if you want to project, that's fine. Everything we've heard from John Robinson every year is that he doesn't like projects. He likes refined products that come in with, you know, production to their name, good character, played a lot of games, and have done a bunch of different things. Corey Davis played in the slot, played outside, played both sides. He took reverses. He did a little bit of everything. So he's a guy that, you know, on paper you may not think did a lot in college, but he did everything a wide receiver could do. Adoree Jackson, we know, played every position on the football field. Jack Conklin played left tackle and was one of the most dominant left tackles that nobody talked about in a scheme that was perfect for what he was going to walk into at a time where it was, you know, Jeremiah Patasi or Byron Bell at right tackle if we didn't add somebody. So John Robinson does not like to take guys that, okay, I know he's never shown me that he can do anything, but we're still going to take him in the first round. So it would just be an insane pick to me, and it doesn't make any sense, and it would be a complete Mike Vrabel pick if he picked it.
Yeah. So let's close out like we did last week, and let's assume for this case that that both Landry and Chubb are off the board. You're picking an edge rusher at 25. Who do you pick? I've got to go Lorenzo Carter, as much as I like Hercules Mataafa.
I'd go Mataafa or Carter. Either one's fine. But probably Mataafa.
Yeah, I mean, I go Mataafa. Because I know, worst-case scenario, I've got somebody who I can play as a nickel defensive tackle and who will get really good production, but somebody who I think can be a really good edge rusher.
But we're going to get Mataafa in, like, the third round, so that's
a Yeah, and we're going to take Davenport in the first round. So, which would be awesome, by the way. If we have important Mata off, that'd be amazing.
That would set them up for a long time to come, probably. So, reminder before we exit, Tuesday, the 24th of April, live full first round mock draft, 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. You'll be able to find a link to that on the Titans Edge Twitter. Until then, for Matthias Wadner, Will Lomas, I'm Luke Worsham. Thank you for listening to the Titans Edge podcast. We will talk to everybody next week with Jim Coburn.